It is a complete and utter mess. Without weight, the blood does not drain downward. Instead, it pulls out into the empty space, like crimson globules looming over the wound, as the victim's life is drained in delicate slow motion. Your conscious tries to drag you away, but your eyes remain fixated on the slow and hypnotic loss of life. You stay absorbed to the scene like a leech until the skin fades into the whiteness of the spacecraft's backdrop. A lifeless vessel now floats inside another, blood still very much intact with the veins it escaped from. When the stars are bright and the house falls into silence, I retreat into my study and practice the piano as softly as I can. Built by my grandfather back in the 1970s, our little lodge has long since become a safe place for our family, tucked away neatly in the remote Swedish countryside. While the house is welcoming in itself, complete with an old brick fireplace and the sleepy smell of pinecone, my study is the coziest of rooms. Whether it be the quietness of the outside world or the long days of the Swedish seasons, whenever I enter the small extension with a grand piano, time just seems to freeze. Once my breathing is slowed and the silence is deafening, I enjoy watching the small specks of dust dancing in the candlelight to my soft sonata. I'm at peace as they drift toward the window opposite me, until they fade from view into the backdrop of the navy blue sky. My gaze remains fixated at the window grill for a few moments, and then, when my mind is at its most relaxed, I see it. A similar speck of dust, transitioning seamlessly into the darkness, moving with more purpose and intensity as it soars among the dying suns. This is when my meditation is interrupted and my family are awoken by my screams. My name is Rhea, born and raised in the Kiruna municipality, Sweden. I work as a flight surgeon for the European Space Agency, while my partner looks after our two beautiful daughters, Trine and Lily. The coldest summer of the decade has been good for my anxiety, and I thank my lucky stars for each day I can wake up to the fresh smell of burning kindle from the freshly chopped wood in our fireplace. I tend to forget how cold the outside world is, and it's only when the children take the dog out to play that I feel the breeze invade our home, much like an unwanted visitor, burrowed deep into the depths of my home, safe from the bitter air. I'm now into my third week of extended leave. This means that I have not stepped foot outside of my house for the past 16 days. My colleagues await my return next Monday, but I don't think that I want to go back. If you look up at the night sky tonight, your eyes may be greeted with minuscule movements of light. While many confuse some of these soaring specks of dust to be shooting stars, they are in fact satellites. Whether it's China's Tiangong-1 Space Laboratory, the Hubble Space Telescope, or Russia's Soyuz and Progress spacecraft, only one is currently occupied: the International Space Station. Since its launch in the late 90s, I've been fascinated by the team's progress and the scientific findings which spurred me on to work as a flight surgeon. While that bright-eyed little child sat in awe at the ISS's first ever mission, little did I know that I would have such a significant part in its last. In September of 2019, the crew would embark on another ambitious project led by a man named Marcus Anker, the ISS's most significant and final member. A Masters of Science graduate from the Royal Institute of Technology, Anker had dedicated his entire education towards becoming an engineer. Son to a wealthy Polish surgeon, he spent his younger years in the German city of Leverkusen, roughly 30 miles from the European Astronaut Center. It was fairly early into his career that he was selected to join the space agency, leaving plenty of time for word to spread about his excellence. Once I was stationed in Cologne back in 2005, he was already somewhat of a legend in his own right. There was a presence about this new golden boy, which was only reinforced by his burly physique. He was passionate about the arts and held a sophisticated taste in classical music. You could always tell if Anker was around because Dvorak's Serenade for Strings will be playing faintly from a nearby room, dancing delicately amongst the bustling sounds of the European Astronaut Center. When the stars are bright and the house falls into silence, I sometimes hear that same song playing quietly in the distance. My role was to direct all medical activities during the ESA missions, monitor the crew's health via telemetry, and provide weekly consultation. I had my own room set up for the consultations to ensure doctor-patient confidentiality. The cold metallic chair they provided was far from comfortable, and the headset made my ear throb, but I had made the room my own. It was a long distance away from my cozy study, but the line photos of Trine and Lily were a welcome sight for whenever I felt homesick. In the corner of the room stood my own coffee machine, which I made sure to put to good use during long training nights. One single espresso every 4 hours was my nightly mantra. Any more than that, and my anxiety would hit the roof. In May of 2019, I had my first official meeting with Marcus Anker. Most of the office had gone home due to flash floods around Cologne, leaving the building all but empty. I had been sat in near silence for a few hours when I heard the sound of footsteps approaching my door. While we had met in passing, I don't think the guy had really noticed me until now, so my nerves were more than justified. The firm grip of his handshake was counteracted by a more softened gaze. I braced myself for a few minutes of awkward small talk, but, much to my surprise, they never came. Before I even noticed, what should have only taken 10 minutes of our time soon became an hour. Instead of being on a lonely commute home, Anker was in the middle of a fascinating tale about a recent visit to Vienna and how he got the chance to perform at the Vienna Staatsoper Opera. He was talkative, but not too imposing, interested, but not too intrusive. He had shown more interest in me than anyone during my 5 years at ESA, meaning that our conversations lingered at the back of my mind. Marcus Anker would attend 7 more checkups, and each one would be as engaging as the last. By the time launch day was upon us, I was quietly saddened to be losing such a fascinating person from my life. Since our first meeting, he had rarely talked about himself, aside from when I was asking medical questions. He was always making sure that I was well and asking about Trine and Lily. What should have been one-on-one therapy had ultimately become a form of group therapy for the both of us. While this was welcoming, the limits of our professionalism were being pushed, so I figured that the new distance was a good way to quell any familiarity. Following a successful launch, it took Anker the planned 2 days to reach the ISS. Over the past week, memories of our first meeting have played on loop in the back of my mind, like a broken record designed to plant the seeds of doubt and anxiety at the depth of my stomach. I should have noticed. I should have done my job and seen the warning signs, but I was blinded by this man's subtle yet powerful manipulation. Now the burden of this situation sits rightly and firmly on my shoulders. Initially, it was good to see and hear from Anker again once he was in orbit, but the warmth of our pre-launch meetings had been replaced by a certain coldness that I couldn't quite understand. He was oddly unremarkable during my consultations, whether it be because I couldn't see his face clearly or because his grandeur was lost amongst the video transmission. The man seemed to be void of all emotion. On the plus side, this meant that our conversations remained minimal and we got on with our jobs. But a small part of me was still bursting to talk to him about music, culture, life. Whenever I tried to delve slightly deeper into his psyche, Anker would thank me for my time and wind down the conversation. Nothing was ever significant enough for me to flag though, and despite his newfound coldness, everything was in order. We had no reason to believe otherwise, until the Sunday blackout, when the ISS fell into darkness and the phones went ballistic. The space station has been known to briefly lose communication with Earth in the past, and there is an evacuation procedure in place for when it does. Every morning, the Russian cosmonauts relay a series of numbers and coordinates with Earth, which explain the nature of the orbit of the ISS for the forthcoming day. If, for some reason, the crew on board the ISS were forced to evacuate the station without the assistance of ground control, this information would enable them to do so through the Soyuz spacecraft. This process is put into action after a few days of no contact, and it had been 48 hours since NASA last heard from one of their astronauts. The dead silence creeped into the early hours of Tuesday morning as the remaining hopes shifted towards the Soyuz escape plan. While NASA continued to lead the operations, ESA worked desperately on contacting Anchor, meaning that half of us were given split shifts. I was about to head home to rest before my early start when we received a transmission from the ISS. The time was 11:30 CET on Tuesday, the 8th of January. We counted 3 seconds of darkness before the transmission flickered into life. Flash. The deafening silence of space invaded the control room as everyone gathered around the monitor. Flash. The faint glow of the emergency light filled the scene with the color red after every passing second. Flash. Gasps echoed throughout the room as a figure floated slowly in the center of view. Flash. Every burst of red light brought the figure's features to life. Flash. A burly physique. Flash. A menacing smile. Flash. Then it stopped. The vessel was now lit up entirely by the red glow, like some sort of hellish inferno. Our figure took the shape of a lifeless Marcus Anchor, surrounded by debris in a horrific crash scene. A few of us had just about turned for the door when the sound of Serenade for Strings in E major began trickling through the control room speakers. My heart jolted as Anchor began humming along, his face stained with a dark liquid as he sat in a perfect lotus position. The light deciphered his manic expression as he drew away from the camera, which is when we saw her. The room stood frozen, pale with fear, as a head of long black hair flowed slowly into the frame. For a moment, she looked at peace, floating blissfully, eyes shut in zero gravity. Then, in one swift move, Anchor grabbed her by the neck. As Antonin Dvorak's symphony reached its climax, the surviving crew member wiggled and pleaded at the top of her lungs with the monster that was now being shown on our screen. The desperate juvenile calls for a mother only lasted a few seconds longer before Anchor bit into her artery. The blood slowly splattered across his face as he gnawed at the flesh like some starved beast. I tasted sour vomit in my mouth as crimson globules covered the camera, and then everything went dark. The brutal murder of Roscosmos' female astronaut is the last image that I remember after waking up roughly 14 hours later in the hospital. I dread to even think about what he did to the others. Besides, NASA closed everything down pretty quickly and put me on the first flight home with a government official. NDAs were signed, but my silence has reached breaking point. No one knows what will happen because nothing like this has ever happened before. What I do know is that when satellites reach the end of their mission, operators have two options. They either leave the satellite in its current orbit or move it to what we call a graveyard orbit, meaning that the spacecraft is sent into the abyss. If you look up at the night sky tonight, your eyes may spot minuscule movements of light. One in particular moves with more purpose and meaning than the others. Yet to me, it shines less brighter than before. Because every night, I lay restless, knowing that on board that particular speck of light lives a monster amongst the darkness, looking down at me, looking down at all of us.